You are listening to Teen Connectivity, a podcast for parents navigating the wilderness of adolescence. You are not alone. It is harder than ever to be a teen and to be the parent of a teen. These conversations are offered to deepen your understanding of the realities of being a teen in the digital age, to give you a few more tools for your parenting toolkit, and to cultivate greater empathy for your teen and for yourself. Put all this together, and it is my hope that your connection with your child will be strengthened and grow, and you will find much joy on this sacred journey. This is episode number one, an honest conversation about screens. Hi, this is Vashti Somerville, and you are listening to Teen Connectivity. Today is the very first podcast I've ever tried, and I thought I would start with an honest conversation about screens. Every day there seems to be some new article or news report about all the bad things that screens are doing to our kids. And as parents, it's so easy for us to get spun up in our fears and anxieties surrounding this issue. And it's normal because what we are seeing in the news is very, very scary. But reacting to our kids from a place of fear and anxiety is, as you have probably guessed, ineffective. It can have the tendency to perpetuate power struggles. It can damage the parent-child connection. So, not only do I believe that this is one of the main parenting issues of our times, but I believe it's one of the main things that we are working through as human beings. In essence, I think, we could say we're doing a giant social experiment on how to live in the virtual world while staying connected to the real world. So how to use technology without technology owning us. So today I want to unpack that a little bit, and I want to start the conversation by first saying that if we are honest, we as adults are terrible role models, and that is myself included. And I think that to begin any authentic conversation with our teens about screen habits, we have to first truthfully examine our own relationship with technology and with screens. I've facilitated workshops with parents and kids where kids were given permission to speak freely, and a lot of them shared the sentiment that adults are all about do as I say, not as I do. And that's really hard to hear as a parent, and it's really hard to look in the mirror and say, okay, where are we placing limits on our kids that we are not following for ourselves? So I'm going to talk a little bit about interactive apps especially. So Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, gaming, lots of video games. They are designed to create compulsion looping in our brain. So in other words, the reward center of our brain is activated by that like, that notification ding of some sort, or anything that tells your brains, hey, something's going down that you don't want to miss. So this means that we are all getting a dopamine hit that we're getting addicted to and craving more and more of. Ding, dopamine hit. Hey, you got an email, dopamine hit. Oh, I hit that next level on a game. Dopamine hit. And yes, this is happening to us as adults too. We are not impervious to the brain hacking that is going on by this sort of compulsion looping and activation of reward center in our brain. So I think the first thing that we have to do is humanize ourselves with this issue with our children. So letting them know that as a society, as human beings, we are all learning how to live with the best and the worst technology has to offer. So being really honest and reflective about the ways that we as adults are using technology at times as an escape, and how we are just as addicted to the ding of the next email, the Facebook notification or a news update, as they are to the things that they find important, such as Snapchat. And I think also being honest that sometimes after a long and stressful day, we choose to veg out on a game because being a human is exhausting, and it's really hard a lot of the time. So the first step is us being authentic and honest with our children about this and many other issues. But once we can be very honest and authentic with them, they will trust us more and therefore be more open to conversation. And notice I said conversation implying dialogue, not always lecture and advice. So once we've acknowledged that all of us are trying to learn to coexist with technology, we can move beyond using screen time as a reward and a punishment or as a carrot and a stick. Technology certainly isn't all bad. I mean, we couldn't be having this conversation via a podcast without technology. So there's no denying that positive social and professional connections can be made. Screenplays are written, businesses are built, films are produced. Lifelong learning is accessible to all of us in ways that have never been possible before. I consider myself relatively young, and guess what? When I was in college, I was still using encyclopedias to write research papers in college. Kids listening, if you don't know what an encyclopedia is, you should do a research project on that, because that's how we used to get information when we wanted to learn something new or we had an assignment due for school. So there's no arguing that the benefits of technology are immeasurable. I currently take piano lessons via Skype from one of the most incredible teachers in the country who lives several states away from me. This is amazing. I could not do this without technology. So that brings me to my next point, that all screen time is not created equal. So let me say that again. All screen time is not created equal. So awareness of how we are using screens is the primary tool for both adults and kids to cultivate in order for us to be able to live with screens in the healthiest way possible. Okay, so just being aware of when we are using technology as a tool or when it's a tether, when it's got its claws in us. And I think we all as human beings need to check in with ourselves and have fairly heightened level of self-understanding as to when, you know, when we are using these screens as a tool and when they are an escape. I think it's safe to assume that we can all use technology, adults and kids alike, to escape from feelings of anxiety, upset, boredom. I mean, none of us can really stand in a line waiting. You know, you're in the queue at the DMV waiting to get your driver's license. What do? You check your phone. We don't just kind of sit there being in our inner world with our thoughts. We're checking our phone. Each time we pick up a device and we use it as an escape, we are taking away that opportunity to be in our inner world and to learn to move through feelings such as boredom or anxiety. We use the screen to avoid them. And I believe we're missing out on opportunities to create resilience and to allow feelings of discomfort or boredom or whatever might exist within us to evolve us to our best selves. Because I do think that those uncomfortable feelings exist to push us into new directions. And that goes for adults and kids alike. So I don't think that setting arbitrary time limits is the most effective parenting tool. Okay, you get 45 minutes of screen time a day and that is it. If we believe the premise that all screen time is not created equal, then this is arbitrary and doesn't stand up to reason. So I think as we're cultivating this awareness, a really good practice for parents is to narrate what they are doing on the screen, what we are doing on the screen. And this idea of narrating, it isn't mine, but I can't remember where I heard it, but I think it's fabulous. It's great modeling for our kids. For example, I might say, okay, I'm picking up my phone to look up a recipe for dinner. You know, this should be a great dinner. Would you like to help me make it? In this moment, as your child observes you on your phone or your computer, they're not making assumptions that you are on social media or the news or working. And hopefully this modeling will manifest in them letting you know what they are doing on their screens and also help us as parents to stay out of assumption mode and acknowledging that our children too can use their screens as a tool and as their own form of networking with the people that are important to them. So it also, this idea of narrating also helps the people that are in the room with you to know that we aren't putting the screens before them. And I'm going to have a little bit more on this idea of people before screens. When I get to the end of the podcast, I'll have some suggestions for house rules regarding technology. So as we begin to cultivate this awareness of when we are using our technology as a tool versus an escape or a tether or whatever you want to, however you want to term it, as we begin to cultivate awareness as an even better gauge, an even better gauge to ask ourselves is the question, am I balancing being a consumer with being a creator? Humans are wired to create. We all have this desire wiring to create. And that doesn't mean everyone is a great painter or a great musician or a great writer. And cooking a beautiful meal for your family is an act of creation. Making a garden is an act of creating something. Even cleaning a space and, you know, making it beautiful for your family to be in, that is an act of creation. And creating is a vital part of human existence. So technology can play a really big role in that. One of the things I like to say to my own children is that, hey, someone has to make all that stuff that we consume via technology. Someone has to create that. So why not let it be you? Why not let it be you as the adult, or why not let it be you as your children, planting that seed that they too are really innately creative beings that could create any of this stuff that they use. So someone using the technology to help actualize some sort of entrepreneurial dream, or, you know, to learn about how to animate something or to take an online class is much different than time spent scrolling through Facebook, the news, Snapchat, Twitter, etc. So it just something to be really aware of, that all screen time is not created equal. So let's kind of back up. We've talked about humanizing ourselves with our children, letting our children know that we as adults, this is new to us as well, and we are also trying to learn how to best live with it, okay? So that's the first step. Second step is awareness of when we are using the technology as a tool and in a healthy way, and when perhaps we are using it to escape, to combat boredom. And that boredom could be, you know, creativity's best friend. It could be moving us towards something great. And so this idea that all screen time is not created equal, and asking ourselves the question, am I balancing being a consumer with being a creator? So I want to take a step back here and look at some of the physical, psychological, and social effects of screens. So I am not a scientist or a doctor, but I have read a lot about this topic, and I have lots of lived experience as a technology user and as a parent. There's a great book that I read recently by a psychiatrist. Her name is Victoria Dunkley, and her book is Reset Your Child's Brain. And in it, she goes into some of the physical effects of screen use. And in the notes for this podcast, I will put a link to her website, and I will have the book title, so that if you want to dive more deeply into the science behind this, that resource will be there. So one of the things she talks about is neurotransmitter dysregulation. It's a super big word. We can now throw that around at dinner parties and sound really smart, right? Neurotransmitter dysregulation. So I mentioned dopamine hits earlier. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that is a key player in motivation and reward. And most pleasurable experiences involve a release of dopamine. So if the reward center of the brain is being continually activated by interactive apps and releasing dopamine, you're going to crave more of it. So have you ever noticed yourself or your child being irritable when you get pulled off a device, either as an adult, oh, you're off your device, but you're kind of a little grouchy after being on the screen for so long, or you ask your child, hey, it's time to shut it down, and they're really snappy. it's possible that it's because there is a crash and then a crave for more dopamine. So maybe we aren't meant to get that many dopamine hits throughout the day, and maybe it's sort of a different level of this release of this feel-good neurotransmitter than, say, going on a run or having a workout, this constant like little hits throughout the day. So that's the first one. Now, most of us have heard about the blue light at night being an issue for sleep, how it suppresses melatonin, which is the chemical our body produces that's vital for sleep. So not having enough melatonin and having this light at night is disrupting sleep cycles, I think, with all of us. And it's very evident if you're the parent of a teen or a tween, you know, any child that has a phone later at night, you can see this happen. So now we're craving dopamine and we can't sleep. Disrupted sleep is a known risk factor for depression. And that's kind of a chicken egg scenario, because depression can cause disrupted sleep and disrupted sleep can be a factor in depression. The point being, we probably want to get our screen hygiene. I guess that's a good way of looking at our screen habits, screen hygiene, in order to protect the mental health of our kids and ourselves. So melatonin, like I said, I'm not a doctor or scientist, but I do understand that melatonin has something to do with serotonin production. Serotonin so melatonin increases in the dark and helps you sleep, and serotonin is boosted by sunlight in the morning, which is a little hard to get if your curtains are drawn and you were up half the night on your phone and you're trying to grab some much needed sleep in the morning. You're not getting that morning light and fresh air. And serotonin is the body's natural happiness, sort of feel good, good chemical. So you can see how phone use or screen, you know, computer use, any of these screens can start to mess with your body's natural chemicals. I highly recommend this book by Victoria Dunkley. It's just a really great read. She does put things in terms that, you know, we can understand if we're not psychiatrists. She calls this dysregulation electronic screen syndrome, and goes on to make the case that electronic screen syndrome can be a shapeshifter. And it can either, and I'm going to put this in quotes, this is straight from her book, exacerbate or imitate various mental and neurological health problems. So in other words, it is possible that some people are misdiagnosed and medicated for issues related to screen use. It's also possible that some people with true mental and neurological health problems are experiencing more severe symptoms due to screen use. Now, is all of this true for every person who uses a screen? Most likely not, but this is really good information for us as parents, and as well as for our kids to know. I think our kids should understand that some people can be more sensitive to screens and can be affected in these ways. Okay, we all have been taught a lot in the past year about cyber citizenship and what is bad cyber citizenship and bullying via social media. Those are obvious, can have obvious detrimental effects. And then we also know about FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. It's another big social implication for kids and maybe adults as well, that can really impact our health. So what about more subtle negative effects of being in a constant state of comparing every aspect of our lives to others? And once again, I think this affects kids and adults alike. You know, everyone's putting the best of their lives out on social media. One of my favorite bloggers and authors, Glennon Doyle Melton, she says, we don't send our authentic selves into the digital world. We send our representatives. Let me say that again. We don't send our authentic selves into the digital world. We send our representatives. And let's be honest, our representatives make our lives look a lot better than they actually are. If we're honest, do we send our representatives to make us feel bigger, perhaps by making others feel smaller? It's just really something I think we all need to reflect on. I don't know. I think that sometimes when we're posting the best of everything in order to make our lives look like they are wonderful all the time, that's a form of maybe passively bullying other people. That might sound extreme, but that's just something that's bounced around in my head a lot. So sometimes when I think about all of us, and I've done it too, you know, putting just the best of everything out there, it makes me want to get really real and go the other direction and post a picture of my really dirty baseboards in my house or the giant zit that I currently have on my cheek. You know, people don't put that stuff on out there. Another researcher who's done a lot of work about the correlation, regarding, I guess is a better word, the correlation between screens and depression is Jean Twenge. I'm not sure how to say it. Twenge. So she does suggest strongly that there is an association between screen time and depression. And I'm going to link her website in the notes to the podcast as well. You know, her research does say that the sudden increase in teen mental health issues certainly suggests a correlation. So the bottom line is that technology isn't all bad by any means, and it's not going away. And would we even want it to go away? But we have to take steps to learn how to live with it in ways that are best for our brains and bodies. And once again, this applies to adults too. I can't say this strongly enough. We will have zero credibility with our kids if we don't let them know honestly that we are struggling with this issue as well and look at our modeling and work through it with them. So I'm going to recap again. Humanize this issue with your child. Let them know that all human beings are learning the best ways to live with and use this technology. Cultivate awareness. When is technology use a tether and when is it a tool? And all of us need to really balance consuming with creating. Okay? So with those things in mind, you can start a process with your family to create main house rules. Now remember, when we create these rules, adults must follow them too, or we lose credibility if we don't. These need to be for everyone in the house. And we need to frame them in a way that it's not meant to punish or withhold, but that we are all trying to figure out the best way to live with screens, what is best for our brains and bodies. We're going to also remember as we create these rules that mistakes are inevitable and that when mistakes are made, we can reframe them as windows for learning rather than meeting them with punitive punishment. So the facts that I'm going to list along with these rules come from the documentary Screenagers. I will also link that as a resource in the podcast notes. That was a really great, great overview of this age of screens and teens. So these rules are just suggestions. One size doesn't fit all. Your family is unique and you have to decide what fits with your family. So first rule, people before screens. Be with the person you are with. So this means we eat meals without a device, okay? Here's one of the facts from Screenagers. Face-to-face conversations improve mood and empathy, okay? Putting people before screens also means that we put phones and devices away in the car, okay? I don't know about you, but I have found that car rides are one of the best times to get your kids to open up to you. I have the best conversations with my kids in the car. Another thought that goes along with this one is that, you know, we would be modeling safe driving. This is a fact from Screenagers. Again, more than half of kids report seeing their parents text while driving. Well, these kids are going to be driving one day. What have we modeled for them? So not only does putting phones away in the car send the message of people before screens, I'm here to be with you, I'm here to talk with you, I want to spend this time connecting with you, but it is also modeling something really safe in terms of phone use and driving. Okay, so that was rule number one. I had a lot of little sub-rules there, but it was people before screens. No double dipping is the next rule. So it's one screen at a time, one thing at a time. So for example, I think we've all seen our kids do this. We've all probably done this. You have a movie playing and you're checking your phone. I've heard of some instances where there's a movie playing, someone's checking a phone and has their something up on their iPad. So one screen at a time, but also one thing at a time. So setting time goals for studying, or working, whatever it is that we have to do as human beings without multitasking, which it has been proven that we can't really multitask. It's just sort of intermittent attention going back and forth between things. So setting goals where we're going to just put those screens away and focus on the task at hand, and then also taking tech breaks altogether. Hey, I haven't moved very much. I've been on the screen. I need to get up and move. I haven't been balancing my creating with my consuming. I'm going to create kind of in an analog way and do some drawing or writing away from the screen. So no double dipping, one screen at a time, one thing at a time. And in case you're pausing this and trying to write these down because you want to maybe implement some of these in your home, don't worry, I'm going to put them in the podcast notes. Okay, the next rule or guidance is give your nervous system and brain a chance to rest. So what this means is no screens in the bedroom when any of us are going to sleep. I think for younger kids, consider keeping screens out completely. It's a little more difficult with older kids in my experience, but once again, everyone's family is unique. I do think a lot of times kids are doing homework in their rooms and they do use their devices for homework. But once again, this is something for you to sort out with your family. So what's the ideal time to shut down? Maybe 2 hours before bed. So just giving our nervous system a time to wind down, you know, letting that melatonin kick in because, you know, we're not having a bright light going into our eyes. Here's another fact from screenagers. 75% of teens get inadequate sleep. So the presence of these devices are disrupting sleep cycles. And this is concerning, especially with this increase in depression and anxiety with kids. So this is something really to look at. So once again, I'll just kind of say the three sort of broad categories: people before screens, no double dipping, and give your nervous system and brain a chance to rest. So I'm going to end today's podcast by saying our job is not to get spun up in all this fear. Okay, our job is to educate ourselves, to become aware, to be proactive, to be human with our kids, to be empathetic with ourselves and with our teenagers. There's another blogger that I really like, Rachel Macy Stafford, and she has a beautiful piece that she wrote on this issue. And it's how to have an enlightening talk with your kid to keep them from drifting into the virtual world. And it's about tethering yourself to real life. And it's a great, great read. And I am also going to link that in the notes. And I read that to my teenagers. I found it very powerful. It was very beautifully written. And it was something that I could read to them. And it started some really great conversation. So you are already amazing parents, or you wouldn't be seeking information. So continue being a warrior for your child. Stay in the trenches. Keep showing up. If you're struggling, you are not alone. It is harder than ever to be a teenager, and it is harder than ever to be the parent of a teen. I mean, let's face it, it's kind of hard to be human right now. There's a lot of bad news out there. So I'll end by just saying, be gentle with one another, for everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. That's one of my favorite quotes. If you need help applying these concepts and practicing them in your life, consider parent coaching with me. You can visit me at www.vsparentcoach.com. Have a great day. You have been listening to Teen Connectivity with me, Vashti Somerville, parent coach and educator. For more information on programs that I offer or to work with me, please visit www.vsparentcoach.com.